And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to a special edition of Awesome Mania. I'm Mike Lindbaum, and with me, as always, is your undisputed Awesome Mania heavyweight champion, Mr. Ben Taylor.
What up, fools?
So, Ben, we're doing this special. We're actually recording it Tuesday night, releasing it on Thursday, because we're actually going to be traveling down to North Carolina for Wilkes Comic Con.
We are.
And we're actually going to be recording another episode of Awesome Mania at Wilkes Comic Con, which will air next Thursday. And then we'll actually be back with another live show again the Thursday before TakeOver Toronto and SummerSlam.
Yeah. The main reason we wanted to do this special is because there was a lot of graps last weekend. Not only was there the G1 Fight for the Fallen, the Evolve 131 show, and the thing, but I also had two Progress things I needed to watch as well. So I had a lot of wrestling to watch last weekend.
Do you like split screen a couple things?
No. The Progress stuff and Evolve. I watched on demand. I watched in the mornings. So. And then I watched Fight for the Fallen Saturday night, and I'm not going to lie, I did not watch Extreme Rules until Monday morning. I'm not going to lie. Because I had D&D on Sunday, so I didn't actually finish watching D&D until like four or five matches had already passed. So I just went back and watched it on Monday morning.
Right. That would explain that text message to me when you asked me, what did I miss? And then I said, oh, this, and we're here now. And it's like, yeah, fuck it, I'll watch it tomorrow.
Yeah, like when you told me what I'd missed, I was like, nah, I've not missed anything.
Actually, the funny thing is when you text me, you'd only missed three matches. You missed
I hadn't missed anything like Joey Janela hadn't shown up in the impact zone or something. I don't know. Bunks was in the impact zone.
Right. So
I'm going to crack open a can of Budweiser right now, because I'm going to open a can of whoop-ass on what happened this weekend.
And also, I think we should also bring up the fact that when we do Wilkes Comic Con, the panel will be like Awesome Con.
Yes,
it will be PG-13. However,
the reasons I wanted to record beforehand.
Which also we should note that for Awesome Mania and Awesome Con, we did get to throw some F-bombs out there, but that also helped that one. I think there was like three total.
We got to have one, but two slipped out.
Yeah, but
no one seemed that bothered, so.
Yeah, well, it also helped that we had the head of Awesome Con on the panel, yeah. Whereas Wilkes Comic Con, a little different, brand new convention. Mm-hmm. We're going to stick to the PG-13.
Yeah.
Which is also why we're doing this, because as you just said, you just opened up a Budweiser and you have a whoop ass to put out.
Yeah, which means we're going to do Extreme Rules first, because there's less of an ass whooping to hand out for Extreme Rules.
All righty. Going right into it on the kickoff show. This match, I will say, we did not have predictions for. It was Finn Balor putting his Intercontinental title up against Shinsuke Nakamura. Which would see Shinsuke Nakamura defeat Finn to become the Intercontinental Champion.
Yep.
Overall, good match. Obviously, they're trying to reestablish Shinsuke as the quote-unquote King of Strong Style. And I think, with that match and the match from SmackDown, kind of established his, that mean side that he had.
Yes.
That's all I got.
I mean, that's all there is to it, because there's no other fucking storyline to this match. This match came around because Finn Balor was being interviewed backstage, and the announcers were like, so who's next? And Finn was like, I've got no idea. And Nakamura was just happened to be walking past and go, how about me? And Finn went, all right.
great storyline telling right there.
Yeah, and we found out that Finn's looking to take some time off, so.
Yeah, starting after SummerSlam.
Yeah.
From what I read this morning, he asked for 2 months. It'll start after SummerSlam, and it's been
time off to recover and
Recharge,
yeah. Which I think with the amount of people they've got on the roster, they should be doing regularly anyway.
And you know what? So I actually have something that I'm going to save for Wilkes Comic Con about Finn Balor.
Okay.
That's if we read.
He has joined the Eva Marie fan club.
Yeah, we'll go with that for now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why he's actually taking time off.
Yeah.
Because he needs to prepare himself. He needs to get ready for it. He just doesn't understand how much undertaking it's going to take.
Yeah.
Next up on the card, you had the Cruiserweight title, Tony Nese versus Drew Gulak, which would see Drew Gulak retaining the title in a solid matchup between the two.
Mm-hmm. This was the second really good match Drew Gulak had had in 2 days, because his match on Evolve 131 against Matt Riddle was phenomenal. The Catch Point reunion show.
Yeah, and Gulak would retain after hitting the Cyclone Clash in the middle of the ring for the win.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, good grabs. I mean, can't go wrong with a Tony Nese Drew Gulak match. Next up, to start the main card, you had The Undertaker and Roman Reigns versus Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre, which would see Taker and Reigns defeat Shane and McIntyre. Mm-hmm. After Taker, Tombstone, Shane McMahon. And I will throw this out there. And it's because of the people that were in the ring with him, but this match made Taker actually look good.
Yeah, he didn't look... Wow.
I'm not saying he looked...
I would go so far as say he didn't look bad. I wouldn't say he looked good.
See, to me, it felt like he actually came out of it looking good. Like, I'm not saying he looked outstanding.
Because he pinned Shane, yeah.
Yeah. But... Like, overall, I enjoyed it.
Here's the thing, right? This match is responsible for one of the best camera shots of the weekend. Which is, it's something that someone we're going to get into when we're going to fight for the Fallen. And it's something we talked about during Fighter Fest, and something we talked about during All In, and it's something we talked about during Double or Nothing. And it's how WWE and AEW are a world apart when it comes to camera production and readiness, right? There was an absolutely phenomenal shot in this match as The Undertaker's going, like, he sticks the tongue out and does the thumb pull across the throat. The camera pulls out slightly and Drew McIntyre just stands up behind him like a killer in a horror movie.
Yep.
And it's an absolutely amazing shot.
It's a beautiful shot.
Yeah. Whereas you can pinpoint several moments during Five of the Fallen, one of which I will talk about specifically because it was my favorite moment from the entire weekend of wrestling. That they just fucked it up.
All right, so next up on the card, you got the Raw Tag Team title match, the Usos versus the Revival, which would actually see the Revival retain the titles over the Usos in what was, in my opinion, a solid tag team matchup.
Great tag team match. One of the things I'm very glad that the Revival retained. Not quite sure how I like how the WWE is slowly mutating their gimmick, but very good, solid match with Revival coming out on top. And I messaged you last night when I was watching Raw, and I said that one of the things about the Usos is even though they lost their match at Extreme Rules, when they came out on Raw all cocky and shit like that, and were like, we're about to lock you in the Uso Penitentiary, it didn't feel weird, right? Like, they've earned that swagger.
Right? Yeah, it's like even in defeat, they still feel like they're the best team anyways.
Yeah, whereas you look at the... All right, let me... Give me a moment, because I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was the 10-man cross-branded All-Star Battle Royal.
That's a mouthful.
Right? to determine the number one contender for the Universal title. Let's talk about that for a minute. I'm going to have to call up a list of who was involved.
Orton, Big E.
Hang on. I'm just
I'm just going to pull it up. Pull it up.
Yeah. I'm going to use the power of the internet.
What, you're not going to use the power of positivity?
Nope. Right, so... there's a few issues I have here. So, the participants are Baron Corbin, big baldy bastard Baron Corbin, the monster among men, Braun Strowman, Randy Orton, Rey Mysterio, Antonio Cesaro, Big E Langston, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Bobby Lashley, and randomly Sami Zayn. Right. So, first things first. And this is why I brought up the Uso thing, right? Because even though they lost, the Usos still feel like stars. Of the 10 people in the cross-brand All-Star Top 10 Battle Royal, at least three of them lost their matches last night in Cesaro, Bobby Lashley, and Baron Corbin. Why is Shinsuke Nakamura not in here? Why is Kevin Owens not in here? Why is, Kofi Kingston not in here? Dolph Ziggler, The Miz, etc.
Yeah, when you sent me that text about Big E, I was like, huh, that's interesting. Because it's like, I wouldn't see, it's like, it's nothing against Big E Langston right now. Or in general, I mean. But right now, I don't see him as, like, one of those top singles guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really don't. Bobby Lashley, I could see why they put Bobby Lashley in there, because they wanted to potentially try to tease the whole Bobby Lashley versus Brock Lesnar, because that's something a lot of people do want to see.
Paul Heyman even said it in the promo, they should put it in a Brocktagon.
Yeah. So...
spoiler alert, Bobby Lashley would get killed.
Spoiler alert, Paul Heyman just literally talked us into that match. For the 10-man Battle Royal part.
Yeah, I mean, like, he did a great job of selling it. It was still awful. Especially when the outcome was Seth winning and just heading into Brock. You could have accomplished the exact same thing with Seth just coming out during the opening promo and attacking Brock. Because Seth's supposed to be pissed off about fucking losing his title, but he's standing there acting like nothing happened. Like, we get to wait all night to see him. Like, what's the fucking point?
Yeah. That was weird. But,
And there was another thing I just want to cover when it comes to that Battle Royal. Because Randy Orton cut this promo going, I can slay the beast with the three most destructive letters in sports entertainment, RKO. Randy, last time you hit Lesnar with an RKO, he kicked out at one and, like, shoot bloodied your forehead with elbows. Anyway, carry on.
Next up on the card, you had Cesaro versus Aleister Black, which would see Black win after hitting the Black Mass on Cesaro. Good, solid, hard-hitting matchup.
There was a great moment here where, like, where Cesaro caught Aleister Black going for a meteor off the top rope. And everyone started losing their mind. I'm like, didn't Kenny Omega do the exact same thing the night before at Ishima? And no one seems to be talking about it.
but overall, I thought this, like, you and I talked about it last week. This is probably one of the matches of the night.
Mm-hmm. We haven't been covering predictions, by the way.
No, we haven't. Who
did you have for the cruiserweight match?
Cruiserweight match, we both had Gulak.
Okay. And the Undertaker and Roman against Shane and Drew?
I had Taker and Reigns, you had Shane and Drew.
Okay.
And then for the Raw tag titles, I had the Revival, you had the Usos.
No, I would have picked the Revival. Because I legitimately don't think the Usos are going to win a title anytime soon because they can't pick what brand they're on.
Which is very true. Hopefully, God, that shit ends soon.
Yes, it needs to because these fucking programs will be competitors soon. They'll be on competing networks. Anyway, Aleister Black and Cesaro, I think we both picked Aleister, right?
Hold on, let me find... Yeah, no, I picked Aleister and you said it doesn't matter.
All right. So I was right. Okay. and then we had Bayley beating Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss.
Yes. Which I actually enjoyed that match too. That was fun. Yeah. You picked Bayley.
Yeah.
I picked Bliss and Cross. You also put in the thing about Sasha, which
I was fully expecting. Like, here's the thing, right? And I was very vocal about this at AwesomeCon, and that was months ago. So imagine how I'm feeling now. Just want the Sasha Banks things to be over. She either needs to fuck off to another promotion or she needs to come back. It was bad enough what she did originally. She's acting like a spoiled fucking child. She needs to come back and actually fucking wrestle or she needs to go to another promotion. Just shit or get off the pot, will ya?
Yep. And you know how I feel. It's like, at the same time, all this pissing and moaning can also piss and moan her way right out of the business.
It could, legitimately.
And that's what I said at AwesomeCon.
We all did.
Yeah.
There are enough people at this point that are so over Sasha's fucking behavior and just want to see her, like, make a fucking decision and whatever, that people are starting to turn on her.
Yep. So next up, we have the last man standing match, Braun Strowman versus Bobby Lashley, which would see Braun Strowman breaking out through a wall to see Lashley still be defeated.
Can we talk about the more important thing?
Shoot.
With this match? The more important thing is it revealed that referee John Cone, father of Nicholas, youngest WWE champion of all time, has X-ray vision.
Yeah.
Because he was counting when he couldn't fucking see him.
He just went... I think he literally had this moment of like, fuck it, I just think they're down. One! You know? That was actually a very funny moment.
I was just like, how can you tell they're not stood up?
and that they're also laughing about it too at the same time.
Yeah.
For this one, I picked Strowman and you said fired into the sun.
Yes. I think I got that right because that match needed to be fired into the sun.
You know, it actually wasn't that bad.
Yes, but
it wasn't great.
As I say, whenever you say it wasn't that bad, a slightly smaller pile of shit than a massive pile of shit is still a big pile of shit.
But it had some redeeming qualities to it. Like, I liked when they actually went back and were actually fighting around like the concession stands.
Yeah.
Because
I genuinely wanted them to break in on the watch along party.
That would have been funny. Oh, that would have been
brilliant.
To see like all the other superstars and Pat McAfee like shitting themselves, going like, "What the fuck do we do?" That would have been great.
I mean, that would have been the perfect thing for them to do.
So, next up, you had the triple threat for the tag team title, or the SmackDown tag titles: Heavy Machinery versus the New Day versus Daniel Bryan and Rowan, mm-hmm. which would actually see the New Day become 6-time WWE tag team champions. Yep. So I had picked Daniel Bryan and Rowan. You had actually picked Heavy Machinery because of the way they've been getting booked.
Yep.
We were both wrong.
Yep.
So
we should have known they wouldn't have resisted the let's make all of the New Day's champion.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, that's what they ended up making the big storyline of the night. Once New Day did win. Next up, you had AJ Styles versus Ricochet for the United States title.
Mm-hmm.
See some shenanigans at the end. and AJ Styles becoming the new United States champion. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. I was a little exhausted at this point of the pay-per-view, and I kind of dozed off at the end.
You know, there were nearly as many matches on this pay-per-view as there were at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I know. Well, also, I had been working on the website for like 12 hours straight.
But still, the point stands.
Yeah, I know.
Like, this was very nearly as long as WrestleMania, match-wise. Like, because WrestleMania had, what, 17?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So.
In regards to the predictions... where was the match on here? This is all out. Oh, I had picked AJ Styles. Mm-hmm. You had picked Ricochet by disqualification.
I should have been a DQ, man.
So I got the point on that one.
So yeah, there were 16 matches on WrestleMania. Four of them were on the pre-show. At Extreme Rules, there were technically 13 matches. Technically.
Yeah, especially this nice little doozy that lasted like 10 seconds.
17 seconds.
Dolph Ziggler versus Kevin Owens, which saw Kevin Owens just come in, stun Ziggler, and that was it. Game over.
So,
this was also one that was the.
If Dolph Ziggler's career wasn't ended by going all the way in 2014 in Survivor Series and then doing nothing. If it wasn't ended by just giving up the US title, having won it, to just go away. If it wasn't ended by the fact he made a quote-unquote surprise return at the Royal Rumble that year at number 30 and got thrown out literally 2 minutes later, having eliminated no one. If it wasn't killed by the fact that Drew McIntyre used him up and threw him away. If it wasn't used up by the fact that he couldn't even touch Kofi Kingston in any of the matches they had recently, he just got beat on a pay-per-view with a single move. And then they come out on Raw and they want to start a feud with him and The Miz, who no one's seen since WrestleMania, basically. Other than an appearance here or there.
Yep. This was obviously a match that was not on the card when we did our predictions.
Mm-hmm. I think we both would have picked KO if it had been. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree with that. Next up, we have Samoa Joe versus Kofi Kingston, which would see Kofi Kingston... hit the Trouble in Paradise out of nowhere for the pin, mm-hmm. retain the title, and what was a fairly short match.
Yeah. Kofi Kingston. No, sorry. There's two things to know about this match. First, I like that the Trouble in Paradise is becoming a fairly protected finisher. I'm quite happy with that. Second of all, I think it's incredibly interesting to note that Samoa Joe is turning into the modern day Kane, which is he's really, really scary in the lead up and then just loses super easily to whoever he's feuding with at a pay-per-view. So.
Yeah. For this match, I picked Kofi. You had actually picked that Lesnar was going to come out and Samoa Joe was going to beat him.
I had done my fantasy booking, yes.
Yeah.
I still think that would have been better than what happened.
Which, speaking of that...
I'm wrong.
You're not. Winner takes all. Extreme Rules match. Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans versus Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch. Which, by the way... yes, Rollins and Lynch won, but also one of the biggest talking points of this match was the fact that Becky Lynch was hit with also one of the more protected finishers in WWE, the End of Days.
Why is this a talking point? I don't get it.
Because it's the fact that Becky got hit with Baron's finisher.
Okay, I'm going to say it again. Why is this a talking point?
I think this is the partial beginning of WWE finally doing intergender. wrestling. Like, legit. Yeah,
I understand that. But that's my point, is that's why it shouldn't be a talking point. It shouldn't be an issue. This is it's not like he just out of the blue showed up and punched a woman in the face. This is a despicable heel in a long-term storyline, right?
Yep.
And then he immediately got his comeuppance by getting curb stomped through the ring 3 times, right? Just...
I think... Because if you remember, the last time there was real intergender wrestling, it was halted back in 2001 when they did the whole Triple H, Stone Cold, Steve Austin power trip. And they, like, destroyed the Hardys and Lita with chairs. And you see Stone Cold just, like, wailing on Lita.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, like, the end of any physical interaction between the men and the women in the ring.
Was it?
Well, in regards to men attacking the women in the ring.
Yeah, you clearly didn't watch the WrestleMania match with Triple H and Ronda Rousey, did you?
Well, but Ronda was attacking Triple H.
Triple H tried to get a shot in, admittedly. Yeah. But the point is this isn't the first that time we've been teased with intergender violence.
Right. I mean,
and again, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that I want to see, like, men just run out of nowhere and punch women in the face or whatever. What I am saying is there is a time and a place for everything. And you can easily, absolutely easily, set up anything you want when it comes to intergender or whatever, and just don't worry about it. Because as long as you do it right, isn't that what matters?
Yeah, but I think you hit the biggest point, which is, like, as long as it's built right. But at the same time, we're also looking at a major corporation with heavy sponsors.
Okay.
And I
seems to be missing my point.
But the thing is, like, could the sponsors tell WWE we don't want this?
You're missing my point. My point isn't whether the sponsors could say it. My point is the sponsors shouldn't say it, because it's bullshit. Women and men wrestle together all of the fucking time in practice. They literally fucking learn to wrestle in the same rings as each other. This is simulated combat with men and women working together to put in the best fucking show they can. The beginning of this year at the Royal Rumble, you saw Nia Jax go into the Royal Rumble and take 3 or 4 finisher moves, and no one batted a fucking eyelid, because it made sense for the story they were telling with Nia Jax. You saw Ronda Rousey and Triple H go toe-to-toe in a ring at WrestleMania, and no one batted an eyelid, because she was booked right, and it made sense for who Ronda Rousey is. And last night you saw a despicable, despicable heel in Baron Corbin give Becky Lynch an end of days in a storyline where it made absolutely it made absolutely all the sense in the world. There is no fucking reason for this to be a big fucking deal when the other two won. Plain and simple.
Yep. So
and if you say otherwise, you're talking shit.
And then going to the predictions, I had chosen Rollins and Lynch. You said doesn't care, must die. Lesnar cashes in on Rollins. Yep. Oh, no. Yeah, Lesnar cashes in on Rollins. So that's what I had for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd done my booking bit, but I genuinely thought he was going to cash in on Rollins, and he did.
it made the most sense in that regards. So this is all right. Cool. So this is the interesting one. Fight.
Well, let's talk a bit about the Brock Lesnar thing, because everyone was expecting me to lose my fucking mind
over Brock.
Over Brock, right? Now, very calmly said, let's wait till tomorrow, because that will be the barometer. Because I genuinely believed, right, what could have been a really fucking cool story is that on the to christen this new Heyman era, just have Brock lose the title on Monday. I would have loved to have seen Finn Balor show up, take the belt with the help of the club. I would have loved to see that. That would have been brilliant. And it really would have... It really would have... it really would have cemented this new era, right? So... But no.
Now we got this battle royal.
We got this battle royal instead, leading into SummerSlam to just continue the fucking story. So
now moving on to Fight for the Fallen. Starting off with their kickoff show, the buy-in. The first match was Peter Avalon with Leva Bates versus Sonny Kiss. Fun fact, for whatever reason, Bleacher Report Live did not want me to watch this match. So I didn't see the match. And it would see Sonny Kiss win via the pinfall.
Sonny Kiss win via far too many moves that were basically the splits. Sonny Kiss is what happens if the Funkasauruses were male. The Funkasaurus dancers.
Funkadactyls?
Yeah.
So the Funkadactyls, which was Naomi and Cameron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they were male and good wrestlers, competent wrestlers, you get Sonny Kiss. Because Sonny's basically a dancer.
So in regards to predictions, I picked Peter Avalon.
Yep.
You predicted that you will win regardless.
Yeah, because... And I also picked Sonny Kiss. But, yeah. Because I get to see the librarians, and I did. And therefore, I won.
I like the gimmick. I really do. I enjoy it. Next up, you have Britt Baker and Riho versus B. Priestley and Shoku Nakajima.
Riho.
Riho?
Yeah, it's an O at the end of her name.
But this one, we at the time of recording our predictions, we had Britt Baker versus ? And B. Priestley versus ? This match was announced like after we had finished recording.
Yeah.
So, no predictions.
There's not a whole lot to say here because, within the first 3 or 4 minutes of the match, Britt got concussed. So, the match was kind of on autopilot from there.
Yeah. And it would see B. Priestley and Shoko Nakajima win via the pinfall.
Yep. The right decision completely, to be honest.
To have the two newcomers get the victory.
The two better wrestlers, ?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't saying the part about the better wrestlers. It's just the fact
that I was.
The fact that this is B. Priestley and Shoko's first match in New Japan. Or not New Japan, AEW. I'm thinking New Japan. So moving on to the main card, you have MJF, Sammy Guevara, and Sean Spears versus Jimmy Havoc, Darby Allin, and Joey Janela in a 6-man tag match. Now, before we get into this part, you were telling me that you have a Google Doc of our conversation on Facebook Messenger during papers.
So it started out right at the beginning, like about halfway through this match, because I'd had D&D. Sorry, I'd had stuff to do on the Saturday, so I tuned in a little bit late. So my literal first message was, oh God, Marvez and Ross on commentary. This is awful. At least Excalibur's there. At which point you go, yeah, Excalibur's killing it right now.
Dude, Excalibur was fucking killing it. Yeah,
Excalibur's on point. The other two people just need to get out of that booth. I'm going to be honest. And I say, we're what? One or two matches in and JR has already shit-talked Alex Marvez twice, constantly criticized the in-ring product, and Marvez has just been shit.
But going into this match, obviously you had the storyline of MJF, Sean Spears because of Cody.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, Darby Allin because of Sean Spears doing what he did to Cody Rhodes. But I will say this one thing. I really like Jimmy Havoc in this match. I think this is... Here's the thing. Even though, like, I think this is the strongest that he's looked in a match. Because, okay, you had the buy-in battle royal. And his big moment was stapling a cigarette to Joey Janela's head and then stapling Tommy Dreamer in the nuts and then chucking him over the top rope. And then you had the Fatal 4-Way match 2 weeks ago, which he was like non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had this match where he actually got a lot more ring time. And I actually liked what I saw out of Jimmy Havoc.
Yeah, it's all fun and games to say, oh yeah, Jimmy Havoc did really well. But again, as I can say for a lot of stuff here, is there's only a certain amount of times that you can say, well, he looked good in the match before you go, but he doesn't fucking win.
Yeah. But the end of the match would see Sean Spears plant Allen with the Death Valley driver to pick up the victory for MJF, Sammy Guevara, and Spears, which now storyline-wise, Sean Spears can say that he has actually pinned and defeated Darby Allen, which Cody cannot do.
Yeah, they also doing the whole Darby tagged himself in and possibly cost themselves the match after Jimmy Havoc hit the Acid Rainmaker and all of that kind of stuff. So, I missed the storyline as to why Darby Allin had his ribs taped.
From the match against Cody.
Right.
That was the storyline behind the ribs taping.
So, Darby Allin still has his ribs taped 2 weeks later. Right, but later in the night, Cody isn't even wearing a fucking head protector, and he got busted open and had like 12 staples put in his fucking head.
Yep.
I don't get it. I don't fucking get it. Don't fucking get it. I don't fucking get it. I don't.
Tell me why. You know, actually, I'm glad that you brought that up. We need to ask Jordan to find that part where you're singing Tell Me How and get him to clip it.
Tell me why. He's broken 2 weeks later. Tell me why Cody made a full recovery and Darby didn't. All I want to really hear you say is, what the fuck is going on?
Speaking about talking about what the fuck is going on, Ali versus Brandi Rhodes.
Note, right? Just a quick note here.
Oh, yeah, that's right, the predictions.
So you're like, yeah, at least Havoc's having a hell of a show. And I'm like, and I'm a huge Jimmy Havoc mark. I love Jimmy Havoc. I've been a fan of his for a long time. But again, he's getting to the point where he needs to actually win a fucking match. Basically.
Yeah. For predictions, I actually did pick the team of MJF, Spears, and Guevara. You actually had it where MJF would destroy Spears.
And did they have a confrontation?
And, no. Correction. I had it where MJF would destroy Spears. Yes. And I got that wrong. You had it where Spears would walk out or it end in no contest.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
But they did have a confrontation, which I thought was quite nice. When MJF did the cartwheel and the 10 towards him, they gave him the
middle fingers.
Middle fingers. That was pretty cool.
I wonder, when they go on the TNT, I was thinking about this, because there was a lot of middle fingers.
They did a lot of fucking middle fingers.
They've been doing a lot of middle fingers since All In.
And all literally every other word out of Pentagon's mouth is a fucking swear word. It just so happens to be in another language.
So, like, I really wonder what's going to happen when they go to TNT when it comes to that type of stuff. That's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. And the other thing that you're going to have to do at TNT, when they're on TNT, they're going to have to get some different fucking wrestlers, man. And this is a problem they had all night. Every match on Fight for Form was a fucking spot fest after spot fest after spot fest after spot fest after spot fest. And that gets real fucking tiring real fucking quickly and real fucking boring. When it comes to TV, they're gonna need some big lads smacking shit out of each other. They're gonna need a couple of submission based guys, right? They're gonna have to be a bad guy at some point.
It's kind of like, I mean, you gotta look at ECW. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, sure, it was all hardcore and stuff like that, but you still had
your RVDs, you had your cruiserweights.
But you had also your Dean Malenkos and your Eddie Guerreros and your Chris Benoit's. Yep. You know, you had the guys who can wrestle away from the hardcore style.
Yep.
So, moving on, we had Ali versus Brandi Rhodes, and then eventually...
God, this fucking match.
And I will preface this one because I'm already crying. It's okay, Ben. It's okay. So going into this whole thing, like, the storyline had been about Brandi doubting herself going into this match. And because she hadn't been in the ring in a while. And it's just like all that self-doubt stuff. And like throughout the match, like, you have like JR making excuses for Brandi, like, oh, well, she trains in an air conditioned facility. And like, obviously the venue is an outdoor venue. There's humidity.
Right. I want to read you our conversation at this point.
Okay.
So I was like, two matches in, JR has already shit on Marvez twice, constantly criticized the in-ring product, and Marvez has just been bad. You're like, I think it's the first match with JR. You think JR has thrown Marvez off his game? I'm like, no, Marvez is just better in a backstage announcer's role. Also, what the fuck message are they trying to send with Brandi? 1 minute she's upstaging all the women at Double or Nothing and playing the heel, and then she's in a promo crying. What the actual fuck is going on? And you're like, I don't know. And I'm like, pick a fucking story. Like, and here's Awesome Kong. So maybe the story is that a ploy. And I'm like, and now the entire audience no longer gives a shit about the people in the ring and they're just chanting for Awesome Kong, who can barely move and looks like she is old. More people getting upstage. Why are they getting a pass for this shit? And then we both had the same thought at the same time, where we both were like, our panel's PG-13, right? You were like, we should check. And you were like, good idea.
Which, by the way, you can see us this Saturday at Wilkes Comic-Con. We'll be recording a special episode, which will be airing next Thursday.
Yes. And then there was this German suplex spot.
Oh God. Was it Brandi doing the German or was it
Brandi doing the German?
Yeah, Brandi could not do the German.
And it was the shittiest German suplex I have ever seen.
I worried for Ali when I saw that. Like, that was bad.
And you were like, yeah, I've just seen that too. And you're like, and I know I picked Brandi to win, but fuck me, I want Ali to win. And then, like, both women were down. And I'm like, why the fuck is this ref counting to the hard cam? Count to the wrestlers, you asshole! They're the ones that need to hear you! And you're just like, lol. And I'm like, finally, there's an audible chant for the people in the ring. And it pales into the comparison for the chant for Awesome Kong. Also, frankly, Brandi cannot wrestle. Did you see her trying to sell that bulldog? Yep. She did this shitty move where she got up on the second rope and she got the head as if she was going to go for a tornado DDT. But then she put Ali's arm over her head and did like this tornado snap suplex thing, which was more of a Brandi jumped around in a corner and fell over, and then Ali threw herself across the ring. And I was like, was that a suplex? And you're like, yeah, she's just brutal as a wrestler. And then I noticed, does literally everyone in this promotion use a Death Valley driver? Because it was the fourth one we'd seen in like three matches. Two of which were in the six-man tag. I will also point out, talking about that, the six-man tag ended with the use of a Death Valley driver about 5 minutes after a better Death Valley driver had been hit on someone else. Anyway. And then Brandi wins the match because she has a plate in her shoulder and she gives Ali a shoulder block. And my note was, holy shit, are they seriously doing that? Her shoulder block is better because she's Lex Luger from 1993.
Well, and actually before that, Ali actually had it, and I liked how she did the submission, but she had the dragon sleeper on Brandi.
Yep.
Beautifully done dragon sleeper.
Very nice dragon sleeper.
And she actually had the match won, except for Awesome Kong running the interference outside. Yeah. Now, let's get right to it. Brandi picked up the win, but it was after the match.
No. There is one more piece of thing to note that is very important here. And it's at the end of the match. They said, what was Awesome Kong doing here? We literally had no idea she was going to be here or that she was going to come out. At which point I said, what do you mean no one knew? They literally said it at Double or Nothing. Ali said it when she was on commentary. When Awesome Kong came out and Ali was like, oh, well, I guess that's going to be Brandi's
backup. Or muscle or something like that.
She said that she's bringing to fight to the Fallen. Like, you can't say you didn't know when you literally said it on commentary, you fucking assholes. and this was the second match, the six-man tag being the first match, where the camera work was atrocious and just missing spots, missing important things like hot tags or interference or that kind of thing. This was the start of the atrocious camera work, these two matches. So
yeah. For predictions, and then we'll say what happened after the match.
Yep.
For predictions, I had Brandi, which I was right, and you picked Britt Baker.
Yeah, because I figured the reason I picked Britt Baker is like she's the best winner in the long run because it builds up more people from defeat to her.
So, so Ben, take it away about what happened after the match.
Right. So after the match, Awesome Kong gets in the ring and is about to hit Ali with a move. Right. When out of nowhere, fucking Asia Kong comes out. And now Awesome Kong takes fucking forever to get in the ring. She doesn't look like she can move very well at the moment. I don't know whether it's her age or injury or ring rust or whatever, but she doesn't look like she's moving very well at the moment. And then Aja Kong comes strolling out like, I'm a fucking murder someone. And if you know anything about it, Aja Kong is like this mythical badass from Japanese Yoshi wrestling. and just the crowd lose their fucking minds. They lose their fucking minds. And it was the biggest pop up to that point that you could hear on stream. Now, I do want to say, do not judge the pops at Fight for the Fallen from what you could hear on stream. From all of the actual in-arena footage that I've seen, like from like hand cams and stuff, the crowd were fucking loud for the first like three quarters of the event. But it just wasn't mic'd very well. Or I guess that it's kind of hard to mic like a music venue for crowd sound or something. I don't know, but it just wasn't represented very well. Like the crowd were hot, apparently.
Yeah, because I do remember after the event was over, Tony Khan, he's two things were noted. Tony Khan really wanted to use that venue, and he actually replicated the venue based off of South Park, that wrestling episode that they did. So obviously, and as we've learned with like WrestleManias and any WWE event that's been done in a stadium,
it's super hard to
sound just rises up and it never really comes back down. So it could also be that effect because they were technically outdoors for it.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, the person that came out of the all four women involved in the match, the one that was out there for 10 seconds looked the best. And all she did was stand still.
Like,
there was a great moment where, like, she was stood there facing off with Awesome Kong. And Awesome Kong went for it, and Aja Kong just didn't even blink. And it was like, wow, you just fucking killed or like, you murdered Awesome Kong without moving. Like, she is dead now.
It's why Brandy had to drag her away.
And then they cut back to the commentary table,
which was a very common thing.
Very common thing. Because they don't have a backstage setup at the moment. They haven't worked that shit out. That is the role Alex Marvez should be in because he's really fucking good at it. But they cut back to think, and I'm expecting them to go off about who Aja Kong is, like why what happened was what just happened was significant, what it could lead to down the road. And it's just like, the Young Bucks and the Rhodes Brothers, which they talked about for the four previous visits to the booth as well. They literally didn't talk about another match in the booth until right before
the match was supposed to start.
No, until right before Kip Sabian and Hangman Page. Every other pre-match segment was building for the main event. And it was it was absolutely pointless and annoying. And they kept repeating themselves. And Jim Ross needs a fucking teleprompter because he's just bumbling, mumbling old idiot at this point. He doesn't know where he's going half the time. And that's not me trying to be offensive. It's just he doesn't know how to do that. At the moment, he's just, it's not his thing. And I'm not hating the fact that they kept going to the booth, mainly because other than that, we'd just be staring at a ring silently, right? What they were discussing was the problem for me. Like, don't build up the main event. Like, yeah, sure, go ahead and mention the main event. Be like, hey, we got the Rhodes Brothers against the Young Bucks main eventing tonight. But to tide you over till then, the next matchup will be the three team, blah, 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 six man, this, that, the other. Like, talk about the matches. Make us care about these matches. Make us know why they're important. They just weren't doing that.
Yeah. Next matchup on the card, you had the Dark Order versus Angelico. I said that right? Yes, working on it. I've been practicing. And Jack Evans versus Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus with Marco Stunt, which, by the way, was supposed to be at MCW Pro Wrestling taking on Jimmy Lloyd as part of the Shamrock Memorial Cup tournament.
Can we talk about how fucking over Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus are?
They're over.
They're over as fuck, dude. Let's be fair.
And obviously this is a triple threat. Winners will advance to All Out for an opportunity at a first round bye in the inaugural AEW World Tag Team Championship tournament.
Again, I point out that in order to earn your first round bye, you have to win an extra match than everyone else in the tournament. And again, I will point out there are 8 tag teams in AEW right now. If someone's getting a bye in the first round, that means only 6 other teams will get to compete. So who's not taking part?
The loser of the match between Best Friends and Dark Order?
Why is that fair? Because they've won a match, unlike the teams that they beat. Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy are 0-2 right now. Angelico and Jack Evans are 0-1.
No, they're no. Angelico and Jack Evans are legit 0-2.
A legit 0-2.
How are Lucha?
So why would
Jungle Boy? They've only had what?
No, sorry, I was thinking about Angelico and Jack Evans.
Yeah.
So why is a team like Best Friends, who are 1-1, gonna get put, like, say
2-0?
Best Friends, no, at the time they, if they lose the match against Dark Order, they're two and one, yeah, right? Why would they not get to take part and Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus do when they're 0-1? Or Jack Evans and Angelico, who are 0-2?
Yeah, definitely interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So, as I just mentioned, Dark Order did win because that's who, obviously, the Best Friends are now going to be facing it All Out.
Almost like I predicted that.
I think you did, actually, because I picked Angelico and Evans to win.
I will, however, say this. Dark Order's in-ring style does not fit their gimmick. Like, the man previously known, well, I think he's still known as Evil Uno.
According to this, he is known as Uno.
Okay, so just Uno then.
And then the other one is he Grayson.
He's very comedy style, right? That does not fit the Dark Order gimmick.
Anyway. The entrance was cool, though.
Was it, though? It was just them and a bunch of gimps.
Yeah.
You want to talk about cool entrances? You talk about Bray Wyatt from Raw, but
oh god, that was awesome.
This is a match where camera work was at almost its worst all night. There was a moment where Luchasaurus was Jungle Boy, one of the two, had been getting worked over for a while and went to tag either Angelico or Jack Evans. And it looked like Angelico and Jack Evans just fell off the ring. Like they didn't want to get tagged. And it wasn't until you heard on commentary like, the Dark Brotherhood have pulled them off the ring apron. I'm like, you should have shown that with the fucking cameras.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, because Grayson pulled him off.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. But it just looked like they fell off the ring apron. I was like, what the they're fucking luchador. They wouldn't... What the fuck? Do they not want to win the match? Oh, they got pulled off. Maybe we should have shown that on camera, boys.
Ruh-roh. A
fucking important moment there.
Next up in the card, you had Hangman Adam Page versus Kip Sabian, who's super bad. Right.
Another thing I want to point out from our conversation, and you were like, holy shit, the height that Luchasaurus launched Marco, because they did the launch to the outside, like the rocket.
Yeah, like after he got ejected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I was like, man, I've loved Luchasaurus for a while. I love that more people are getting to see him. Why does JR keep calling him Jungle Boy Jack? And you're like, I don't know. It's like the entire second half of the match, he's called him Jungle Boy Jack.
Yeah, that was weird. It was like that, like halfway through the match, he just started calling him Jungle Boy Jack. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why? His name is Jungle Boy.
I don't know.
Where did Jack come from?
I don't know, Jack.
So, for Adam Page versus Kip Sabian, we would see Adam Page win the match.
No, let's be fair. We'd see Adam Page win the match without stepping in the ring.
Yes.
Because they had like a 3-minute promo package. It was like, watch us suck Adam Page's dick. Isn't he fucking great? And I'm like, why even have the match? Just smash cut to a black screen that says, Adam Page won the match. Kip Sabian fought well. Save yourself like 5 minutes.
Like one of those
bodges. Save yourself nearly 20 minutes, right? That way you might actually get your final promo package out and not have to put it on Being the Elite this week.
You mean kind of like, what was it? Like one of those vaudevillain like segments. It's like,
yeah.
Like, here's the match. It's like he fought well. That was it. And that is like curtains. So, yeah, solid match.
It was like, don't get me wrong. Kip did himself again. We're in another position where Kip wrestled really well, but the outcome was never in doubt. Like ever.
And for predictions, I forfeited the pick.
Yeah.
My prediction, because we knew it was Adam Page. And you put down Jericho got involved in the match.
I said Jericho got involved. I did not say he got involved in the match. I said he attacked Hangman.
Well, he did after.
Yeah, damn right he did.
Dude, messed up his eye. Like, that looked gnarly.
Gave him, I wasn't sure if it was stitches or staples, but
he definitely got a couple stitches on the eyebrow. He definitely got
he got something. I'm not sure if it was stitches or staples.
No, it was stitches because Jericho tweeted out a photo of it.
Okay.
Or posted it on Instagram, and you could see the actual stitches.
Okay.
On the eyebrow of Hangman Page.
But yeah, they had a fight. Jericho came out in one of the Dark Order Gimp masks. And no one was fooled for a second because it was just Jericho.
It was too obvious.
Jericho. And you said, ladies and gentlemen, have a look at this video package for the winner of our next match. And I was like, have you noticed how we've not really seen the AEW title since Double or Nothing? And you were like, I thought it was shown on the buy-in. It was not shown on the opening hour of this show. I don't know if it was on Fighter Fest or not, but
I also thought that they had also shown it in the opening, like, you know how they do that opening package video.
I'm talking about, we've not seen the physical belt.
Oh yeah, physical belt. Yeah, I think it's because they had been.
You would think they would have that belt ringside for every single one of Adam Page's matches. And if Jericho had any, they should have had it ringside for all of his matches as well.
Or hell, have it ringside for the live mic segment.
Yeah. Just have it on the fucking commentary desk or whatever. I don't know.
Or like on like a, have, like what?
Have it featured so people can go, holy shit.
Look at that belt.
Yeah. And you were like, we have 4 matches in Jericho left. And so during the Kip Sabian Hangman Page match, there's this obnoxious fucking fan that you always see front row at NXT. Who is always trying to put himself over and like be a big part of whatever he's doing. And he lent in really fucking close to
Sabian
and was like, you're shit. You're a fucking prick. And Kip Sabian just turned around and kissed him on the lips and the dude looked like his tatted soul ripped out of his fucking body. It was the best thing.
You know, actually, it's funny. I didn't see that during the actual match.
Yeah.
But I saw in the recap at the end of the match.
Yeah.
Like when they're showing the replays and they show Kip Sabian actually kissing the guy. I'm like, oh, that's what Ben's talking about.
Because I messaged you going, holy shit, Sabian's ruined that fan. And they were talking about during this match, like if this goes to like a time limit draw, if like Hangman's so injured he can't participate, what do they do for the match?
Yeah, because they're talking about Hangman's knee.
Yeah.
Which has been like a regular storyline.
Yeah.
Starting all the way from like Double or Nothing.
From right before Double or Nothing, because yeah. It was when he had the match against Park in England. Park ruined the knee with a chair, I think it was.
So it's been a heavy focus of a storyline for that.
But the point is they were talking about like Moxley or Omega, and you were like, how can they be considered for All Out if they have a match against each other already? And I was like, and you were like, evidently the matches at All Out don't exist. And I was like, yeah, I think the title match needing change would take precedence. And you were like, yeah, I guess.
It's like we're already questioning the booking.
And then Jericho attacked, and I was like, that's Jericho, and you were like, duh. And then he hit the Judas effect, and I was just like, that elbow is so shit. You were like, the Judas not so effective. Which I quite liked.
Thank you. I have my moments. But yeah, next up you had SCU with Christopher Daniels versus the Lucha Brothers. We have a running thing going on here where in tag team matches it's okay to throw out the extra party, but in singles matches it's not okay.
Yeah, especially when. All right, so there's a couple of things that with this match, right? First of all, the single best thing in wrestling this last weekend happened during this match. The single best thing that happened all fucking weekend. It was a star-making turn. And AEW fucked it up. So it start the first thing that you're talking about is when the Lucha Brothers slide out of the ring and attack Christopher Daniels.
Unprovoked.
And then when Christopher Daniels fights back, he gets thrown out. How the fuck does that work?
He was standing at ringside cheering on his team.
Stood there. And the Lucha Brothers were like, we're going to super kick you and then chop you and do this all of this other fucking shit. And then he's like, well, I'm going to fucking hurt you back. And then they're like, and then the referee's like, I'm throwing you out. And he's like, the fuck?
I was so confused. I was watching that going like, he's an innocent bystander. He's standing up for himself. It's not like in WWE where you could telegraph when the outside interference is going to come, you know?
The main thing that I was referencing, it happened right at the beginning of the match. They were doing the whole SCU versus thing where Pentagon and that dude's the Arrow Miedo.
I'm getting really tired of seeing that already.
It's really fucking boring. It has been forever. But they were doing that, and Pentagon does this thing where he takes off his glove and he throws it to the referee, and then he does the Zero Miedo with a bare hand and then just chops the shit out of the bloke that he does the Zero Miedo to. And they did this, and they obviously hadn't warned the ref they were going to do it. So he threw the glove at referee Aubrey, and he threw it like shit, so she couldn't catch it. So the crowd were like, boo. So she picked up the glove and started putting her in her pocket, and he's like, no, I'm not giving it back. And she gave it back to him. He threw it again. She caught it again, and the crowd went fucking wild, right?
Yeah, it was fucking hilarious.
Both times, AEW cut away from her catching the glove. Now, the first time, there's no excuse for it because it's a painted Penta L0M fucking spot. He does it in nearly every match, right? And there's definitely no excuse for it the second time because they fucking telegraphed it. You should be zooming in on her catching that fucking thing, and you should be focusing on the crowd going fucking nuts for her. Because that was a star-making turn. Not only did she look like $1 million when she went, because it was such a natural moment of her just being like, yeah, I caught it. What the fuck of it? You're the one that threw it like an asshole, basically. And her throwing Christopher Daniels out and Christopher Daniels leaving and listening to her, it was a fucking star-making turn. Absolutely star-making.
Yep. At the end of the match, after the Lucha Brothers would defeat SCU, they would attack SCU with a ladder and then challenge the Young Bucks to a ladder match.
And the Lucha Brothers are faces. Can we talk about this for a minute? Lucha Brothers, faces, then attack SCU with a fucking ladder. In the main event, the Rhodes Brothers are the ones that are getting the fucking, that have had the shit ripped out of them constantly in the build up to the match. But everyone's cheering the Young Bucks. The shit. Like, what the actual shit? WTF, crowd.
Yep, well,
cheer your faces, boo your heels. If they're acting like heels, they're fucking heels.
There's a reason why everyone boos Baron Corbin.
Because he acts like a heel.
Yep. Lucha Brothers challenged the Young Bucks to a ladder match at All Out,
which already told you the result of the main event, by the way.
Yeah.
There was no way the Young Bucks were losing against the Roses if they were going into a ladder match with the fucking Lucha Brothers.
And not only that, but here's the other thing. That portion could have been left off the card.
Absolutely, it could have done that on fucking Being Elite.
Yeah, that could have been left off the card, and then they would have been able to do that end the show segment. You know, like the way they wanted to. So for the picks, I had SCU, you had Heavy Machinery, neither of us were right.
Yeah, damn right I had Heavy Machinery.
Next up,
you better actual result.
Next up, you have Kenny Omega versus Shima.
Right.
You have some comments?
I have a lot of fucking comments.
What about a Meteora?
Well, we'll get to that. Let's start with the fact that all they would talk about on commentary, and I mean all they would talk about on commentary, is Kenny Omega has no wins in independent wrestling. Okay. Why did you just say that the Lucha Brothers are 0-2? Kenny was in a match with the Lucha Brothers. If the Lucha Brothers lost, Kenny has a win. That's how that works.
But unless they're trying to reference to him as a singles wrestler,
then you say singles wins.
Yeah.
No wins.
You have to be like, note
that later in the evening they changed it to singles wins.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, you got to be specific at the very beginning when you're talking about this talking point. Otherwise, you're going to lose everybody on that talking point.
Yes. And I know that they're trying to drive home that wins and losses matter in AEW, but just telling us he has no wins doesn't tell us what the downside is.
Yeah, and apparently, speaking about that part, the wins and losses, apparently we're going to find out how they're going to go into effect officially sometime before All Out.
Hopefully.
Like, that's what they said on commentary. Plan. Yeah.
Do they actually follow through with it? Then again, they had a lot planned for this show that they fucked up, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, I was like, before the match, Kenny Omega has no wins in independent wrestling. In this match, the Lucha Brothers are 0-2. How is that possible? I have no idea. I need more freeze pops to numb my brain.
Which, by the way, I need to get these freeze pops in the freezer so I can numb my brain.
And then this was during the Penta. This was during the SCU Lucha Brothers match. I said, they've been teasing Daniel's Penta for an event or two now. Maybe they could do that at All Out. But then they did the ladder match stuff. So, and there's like, and then I was like, they've been making a huge deal of Kenny having no singles win. And you're like, he's had one fucking singles match. And you're like, it's them pushing wins and losses that matter. It's the only reason why I see them over-exaggerating. I'm like, two? True. But they're making it sound like he's been winless for a fucking year. Not to mention, didn't he actually get the pin 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, he did, actually.
And then I say, Marvez and JR just spent the last 5 minutes of Omega working the legs on Shima, talking about his match with Moxley. What the fuck? And then I was like, I fucking hate this ref, because this is the same ref who earlier I was like, don't count to the hard cam. He was counting to the hard cam. I fucking hate whoever that ref is. He's awful.
You know, I really hope they bring AEW TV to DC and we get like front row seats.
Yeah.
And then you just heckle the shit out of that referee.
No, I'm literally going to bring a sign that says, count to the wrestlers, you fucking asshole. or stop counting to hard cam. And I'll just hold that up when he starts doing it. And then there was a point where Shima hit a meteora, and then another one, and then another one, and then about 20 more of them. And then he attempted 7 and missed those. I was just like, holy shit, Shima, do a different move. Fuck me.
It was like a complete polar opposite of his match with Christopher Daniels 2 weeks prior. It was complete polar opposite. And it was disappointing.
Like 12 V-triggers, and I was like, what is it with these people on fucking knees?
It's actually interesting. In the recap that I have up in front of me, it actually counts how many times there's a V-trigger done. And at the end, there were 6 V-triggers.
Yeah. That doesn't count. I would swear it was like 17 meteors.
Well, no, I'm talking about that's the
V. Yeah, but I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Meteora. Oh, yeah.
My point is, the match got real repetitive real quick. I tuned out, and I like watching Shima. I thought his match against Christopher Daniels was great. I like watching Kenny Omega most of the time. So,
do you feel that this was just a match where once they got to a certain point, the chemistry just kind of waned off?
Well, no, because you could do so much more, like submission holds. Holy shit, imagine that. Could you imagine someone doing a submission hold in AEW? Oh, wait, we had a whole fucking 10 minutes of that in the main event, and it didn't mean a fucking thing.
So Kenny Omega would win this match via pinfall after the 6 V trigger.
And the one-winged angel.
And the one-winged angel. For this match, we both picked Omega to win. Then next up you had Chris Jericho's live mic session, which pretty much just prompted Hangman Page to come out.
By the way, can we talk about this for a minute?
Yep.
So the contents of this match, of this, not this match, this mic segment was basically Chris Jericho going, I fucking hate Jacksonville. And then him revealing himself to be a, what's the word I'm looking for? A fragile man. Because he was talking about his mental state and how he realized that if he didn't beat Hangman Page, it would be the beginning of the end of Chris Jericho, basically. And While I would have absolutely appreciated this in any other fucking feud, why could we not have had this feud just be like, I need to beat Hangman Page because I want to cement my legacy as first AEW champion. Like, why can't that just be the story? Why does it have to be that Chris Jericho's like this insecure... Just, I don't get it.
So, real quick, because I have the promo in front of me.
Yeah.
Jericho has wanted one thing from AEW, and that's a thank you. Jericho calls Jacksonville Jerksonville. Jericho wants to be booed. If Jericho wasn't in AEW, neither would any of you. Jericho is responsible for the TNT television deal. This goes behind a thank you. Or beyond a thank you. I think they mistyped that. This goes back to Double or Nothing. Jericho was watching the Casino Battle Royal very closely. Jericho calls Paige one of the best performers in the world. If Jericho beats Paige at All Out, it's another notch on his resume. If he loses, not only is it the end of AEW, but the end of Chris Jericho's career. Jericho has to beat the Hangman. That's why he left Paige in a pool of his own blood. You never know what Jericho is going to do. Jericho promises to become the AEW world champion at All Out. And then he calls Hangman a little bitch.
At which point Hangman jumps him.
Yeah, and starts teeing off on Jericho. And then...
So there's a couple of things here.
Yeah.
One, he comes out, he's like, oh, I've got the blood of Hangman Page on my hand. I'm like, no, you don't. That shit's pink. By now, blood would be brown. That's how oxidized blood works.
Science.
Also, I didn't need you to turn into this fucking complicated. I must beat the Hangman, otherwise it is the end of Chris Jericho. Why couldn't it just be I must beat the Hangman because I'm going to prove that I am responsible for AEW success? Why can't we just do that? Because that's the better storyline. The rest of it's nonsense. It's bad.
Well, something that we found out after the fact was that this entire thing was unscripted. And Jericho didn't even know what he was going to say when he got on mic. And he just let it go out organically.
And I'm cool with that, right?
Yeah.
I'm cool with unscripted promos. But not when they're shit.
And this also would... feature the first ever locker room clear out to break up a brawl.
Yep. We saw Jerry Lynn come out and
I believe Malenko came out
there, and Joey Janela came out.
Peter Avalon, I remember seeing come out.
I think I already said Avalon. But a couple of folks from the locker room came out to keep shit tight, and it wasn't Undertaker Brock Lesnar, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
That
one was a cool one.
But yeah.
All right. So we didn't do any predictions for the live, Mike.
No, because I thought it would happen when he attacked Hangman rather than happen again later. So
yeah. So
I had factored in the fact that he and Hangman were gonna fight in the live mic, so
yeah. I'm going to do the predictions first before we go into this match.
Yep.
I had the Brotherhood. You had, hold on, let me get the paper. 4:20 match, 69-0, Joey Ryan and RVD.
Yeah. 420 minute match. Joey Ryan and RVD are the big winners here, yes. Quite clearly.
But in reality, it would be the Young Bucks defeating the Brotherhood. And I would consider it was a pretty solid matchup. I liked it. I enjoyed it. And I wish the Brotherhood had won. But after what we found out from Dustin and the post-media scrum, which I actually kind of like the fact that they do these post-media scrums. After the pay-per-views?
Well, I'm not seeing any of it, so...
Yeah.
And bear in mind, I watch the IWC every day. Like, I'm sitting here watching the Internet Wrestling Week, and I'm not seeing this post-media scrum stuff that you're talking about.
I think they posted on their YouTube.
I'm not seeing the interviews with these people, so... But yeah, what did we find out from Dustin?
Dustin, he was asked about retirement because originally he had planned on Double or Nothing to be the one and done for him. Yeah. And then the tag match happened, which he was like, you know, if I can still go and the opportunity is going to be there, I'm going to go because I feel reinvigorated now with this new promotion. But he also said that he's going to be focusing on acting. So we're probably not going to see Dustin for a little while because he's got a couple films lined up.
We already knew that.
But he said that, like, him coming in from time to time to do matches, he can see him doing that more realistically now compared to when he first came into AEW.
Yeah.
So that was the thing. But I think if you go to, I think it's AEW's YouTube.
Here's the thing.
And
this is going to be a problem I had all night, is not once did I ever believe the Rose Brothers were going to win. There wasn't a single convincing near fall. There wasn't a convincing false finish. There was zero, zero, zero fucking chance that the Rhodes Brothers were ever going to win this match. Ever.
And then the whole thing with the Lucha Bros a few matches earlier
just cemented it.
Yeah.
And this is... And this match also highlights one of my problems with, I don't want to say the Young Bucks, but indie wrestling in general, right? Dustin and Cody spent like 15 minutes working Matt Jackson's arm, right?
Yep.
And then Matt just picked up fucking Cody for the Meltzer driver anyway.
Like, he didn't show a struggle trying to do it or anything like that.
Like, he, like, slapped his arms a couple of times to get some feeling into it. But that was it.
Like, even then, you still have a little bit of struggle in you.
Or just find a different finish for the fucking match. Hey, Mike.
Yep.
Pause for a sec. I'm sorry.
So, all right, Ben, you've ranted, you raved. What's the next?
The main thing I want to get over is we got to the end of Fight to the Fallen. And it was quite clear there was this whole post-match promo thing planned between the Young Bucks and the Brotherhood, right? Where the Young Bucks would basically go, look, we're sorry for taking the piss out of you. You're as good as they say you are. Blah, 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 right? But like one paragraph in, they start getting cut off by music and everyone, and they're all like, wait, what the fuck? And you actually have the talent say, I guess we're out of time. It's a really bad look. This is their fourth show.
Third.
If you include All In.
Yeah.
And three out of the four have had time problems.
Yeah, this one almost ended at like midnight.
Because All In, they had to cut the main event down to about 30 seconds. And then Fighter Fest was rushed at the end. And then this. So it's like, man... They didn't even know if their post-match promo was going out to live TV. Like, no one was able to communicate shit to the ring. Like, they didn't really know. Like, a lot of people got shit for... because Kenny Omega sent us home, and he usually ends up with the good night and goodbye bang, right? And, like, everyone's like, why do you say boing? I'm like, because they were doing a... fucking charity for gun violence, dude. That's why. And everyone's fucking stupid. I'm like, no, it's not. It's really fucking smart.
Yeah, like, and I thought it was entertaining, and he made it fun, and that's the whole point of it.
Yeah, but like, the whole end of the show was just a bad look for AEW, and they were like, you can't counter program what we're doing, blah blah blah. And I literally at the point I was like, if this is the best you've got, WWE don't need to counter-program you. you are not a competition for the AEW, for WWE right now. You're barely competition for Impact in 2006. It feels like I'm watching Impact in 2006, right down to the tunnels as entrances. Do you remember those?
Yep, I remember those. Those were the days.
It genuinely feels like I'm watching Impact in 2006, man. They've got so many fucking little issues and shit like that. And they keep saying they're having these successful production meetings and how they've got such a good crew. Then why does it keep getting fucked up? Your camera angles are all over the place. Your truck doesn't know when to cut. Your announcers don't know which backstage segment they're throwing to. Your backstage announcers don't actually know that they've been thrown to. It's fucking exhausting, man.
Which comes to the next argument, or the thing that you want to rant about. Yes, the play the devil's advocate card here. Yes, it's only been three events officially under AEW. But in your words, why is everyone giving them the free pass?
Why is everyone giving them a free pass? Nonsensical booking. Nonsensical matches. Spot fest after spot fest after spot fest after boring fucking spot fest. The one match that had any chance of breaking up the spot fest, which was the librarian match, which is more of a comedy kind of gimmick, right? The only match that had any chance of breaking that up, and that was put first. Burying Kip Sabian before your match even fucking started with Hangman. Doing shit like, oh, like Ali must feel fucking horrible right now, having been in that match with Brandy and being overshadowed by Awesome Kong, a woman that might have won maybe two matches in AEW ever because of injury and how she moves and stuff, right? Like, AEW is no better than the WWE right now. In fact, I go so far as to say AEW is worse than the WWE right now. And please, for fuck's sake, stop booking yourselves to win. I don't know who has the book in AEW.
If I read this right, Brandy's booking the women's division along with Kenny Omega, because Kenny's really involved with the women's wrestling. A lot
of experience with Joshi wrestling, yeah.
Cody's booking the main card, and the Bucks are booking the tag team division, if what I read was correct.
Then stop putting yourselves over. The only member of the quote-unquote elite who didn't win was Cody, and that's because he was fighting the Young Bucks.
Here's my thing.
And again, I'm aware that the talent roster isn't deep at the moment. I'm aware that the elite of why most of the people in the crowd are there. But fuck me, man. You could have made history having the Brotherhood win that match. And the build up to that match was so good. That promo that they did on YouTube that they butchered for that opening fucking segment was so good and made you believe that the Rhodes were a credible threat to the Young Bucks. But then when it got to being in the ring, no fucking choice. There wasn't a single believable false finish in any match. Every match, I knew exactly who was going to win when it started by either reading everyone else that had all the other matches that had happened, or just by what was happening in ring. Like, there wasn't a convincing false finish. There wasn't not once did I believe that the Rhodes brothers were going to win, even when they were working over Matt Jackson's arm for 10 minutes. Even though they're these old school wrestlers that, instead of just doing things like slapping an arm on the mat and dropping a knee on an elbow, they should be turning that arm into a fucking pretzel. It was awful.
Yeah. And I've said this before, and I'm going to stand by this. This is not me essentially giving them the free pass.
Uh-huh.
But as I've said before, my key thing that I'm paying attention or wait and really waiting for is that first 6 months to a year on TNT.
Yeah. Also,
and that's what's going to determine it for me.
One of the things that everyone shits on WWE about is like, oh man, the McMahons put themselves over. What the fuck are the Elite doing? Like, for real, what are the Elite doing?
Putting themselves over.
The Young Bucks are 3-0 in the AEW right now. The only person who does, the only member of the Elite that doesn't have a winning record is Cody. It's because he doesn't fucking need it, because he's Cody fucking Rhodes.
Yeah, he's actually 1-1-1.
Yeah. It's you should be using the Elite as a supplement, not as the main part of your fucking card. You should be pushing Private Party. You should be pushing Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. You should be pushing the Best Friends. You should go out and sign the besties in the world and have them feud against the Best Friends for who are the Best Friends in the world. Because the besties in the world are a fucking phenomenal tag team.
Yeah.
You should be pushing people. And again, the people in the main event, people shit talk WWE for the same people being in the main event over and over and over again. But the main event, another fucking can of whoop ass here. The people in the fucking main event at AEW, it's always the Young Bucks. It's always Kenny Omega. It's always Cody Rhodes. It's SCU. It's the Lucha Brothers. The main event of that show last night should have been the three-team tag team match, because it was the only match that fucking meant anything. That should have been the main event.
Yep.
And all of this stuff might mean things retroactively once we find out the big booking mystery in the sky. Fuck. But I don't know.
Well, Ben, this is it's coming to the end of our hour-long special. Man. Ben, this is coming to the end of our hour-long special.
Our hour-long special that's been
like 2 hours.
2 hours. Yeah. This is exactly why I wanted to record this, because A, I don't have to be PG-13 about it, and B, if we were to just do this panel at Wilkes Comic Con, A, we would have covered one show, and B, no one in the crowd will get any time to just, because you know the way we like to run stuff at conventions, which is we interact with the crowd. So
yeah, we let them ask us questions, or in that one guy's case, just kept shitting on NXT.
Shitting on NXT call-ups. He wasn't shitting on NXT, he was shitting on NXT call-ups. He thought NXT was the best, which it is. NXT is probably the single most consistent television and pay-per-view product in wrestling in a decade, if not more. And I'm looking forward to getting down to Wilkes and having fun. So,
yep.
Ben,
where can the
wrap up, man?
Where can the people find you on the social media?
Find me at Bob T Goldfish on the old Twitters. And you can find the channel at 321 Podcast on Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/3topics, 2 guys, 1 podcast. And just for make sure it gets it up there. We will be at Wilkes Comic Con this coming weekend. And the easiest way to find them is on Facebook. And you can just find them on facebook.com/WilksComicCon.
Oh, one word.
WILKESCOMICCON.
Yep. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, you can follow me on Twitter at @TheLindenBaum75, facebook.com/X75Productions. And also I'll be with Ben and Jordan down at Wilkes Comic Con this weekend. Going to have fun doing that Awesome Mania panel.
Yeah, we'll probably get to...
It's going to be challenging as fuck trying to stay PG-13.
I don't think it will. I don't think it will. Well, though, it might, now that I have to talk about the fact that Randy Orton just pinned... Kofi Kingston.
No.
And we're probably going to see new women's tag team champions tonight, I would expect. Because the Iconics are actually having to defend. I don't know. Regardless, there's going to be a lot to talk about at Wilkes. So.
Yep. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, Ben, it's been fun as always.
Sure.
And until next time, when we're in Wilkes Comic Con, we will see you.
Do you want to say that again so it doesn't sound like you're trying to be William Shatner? Comic Con.
Until next time, when we're at Wilkes Comic Con, we will see
Thank you.
We'll see you ringside.